Hi, you've been using Power BI Embedded for some time now, and you must be wondering, how can I bring better insights through more custom visualizations in Power BI? This video is going to walk you through how do you create custom visualizations inside Power BI. I'm Sachin Putney. I'm the software engineering manager for Power BI's custom visual framework. First off, I'm going to start walking you through the visual lifecycle. And then we will proceed to data binding and formatting for Power BI visualizations. The way custom visualizations work in Power BI is exactly the same as our visualizations work. We have three key concepts. We have the constructor, which is where you would do one-time data bindings or DOM construction. And then the update method is called every time you're going to resize your visualization or make any data changes to it. And finally, when your visualization is going to be removed from the screen, we would call the destroy method. These are some of the options that you get with the constructor. In the constructor, you would often get the element that your visual is hosted in, you would get the initial viewport size, and you would get some of the host services along with it. The update method will call you with the viewport again and would call you with the data that it has come updated with. Then there is the destroy method, which is called each time your visual is removed from the screen, and this is where you typically clean up some resources. The enumerate object instances method is a little interesting, and we'll cover it in a little more detail when I code up the live example. But in essence, it's used for creating custom visualization formatting options. Some of the key points in creating a visualization is you have a view, which is typically made up of SVG elements, DOM elements, or if you use Direct2D technologies like Canvas and WebGL. What powers the view is a view model that you have designed specifically to support your visualizations. And then the third aspect is the data model, where all your data is stored in a very generic format. In Power BI, the data model is data view. Data view is essentially an abstraction on top of your data model. It contains data which comes in a few shapes: categorical, tree, single, table, and matrix. All of these also have an additional metadata about the columns, which tell you information like display name, what it should be formatted with, what is the type of this column, etc. The most common and easily understood data view shape is a table. The table data view essentially has a collection of columns and rows and has some additional information like totals. Totals are important as your data view could be potentially millions of rows, and we don't send down all this data. We would limit it to, say, 30,000 rows. But you still want to know some interesting information about what is the total of all the rows, and we provide this information through this data view. It also comes together with identities. These identities help you to uniquely identify each column so that you can go ahead and start selecting points and performing cross-filtering across visualizations. The categorical data view. The categorical data view is the one that most of the Power BI visualizations are built on. It is very similar to the table data view, except it allows you to do pre-aggregation of your columns if you wish. For example, in this case, we have values from Coke, Pepsi, and water. There are two series, there are two types of values, in this case, calorie and the score. And even though Coke might have multiple rows in the table, what it does is it combines all the values in an aggregation that is specified by the user. An example could be submission or average. And this is kind of what it looks like when it's rendered. This is a perfect segue into how do I actually build a bar chart? Power BI has recently released a bunch of command line tools that help you create custom visualizations. If you go to our GitHub page, Power BI Visuals Tools, you would be brought here to our Visuals repo. And what it allows you to do is install the Power BI tools through as an NPM package, and also provides you a usage guide on how to build your first visualization. And this guide will walk you through all the details about the API, how do you set up your environment, how do you build your first visual, and we have a step-by-step commit of each change that is required. I'm going to skip some of the environment setup steps, and I'm going to bring you right into starting to develop a custom visualization. The first thing you would have done is installed the visualization through the node modules. So if you were to type pbi-viz on your command line, you would notice a few options that you can apply into creating visuals. So if you type pbi-viz new, bar chart, what it does out of the box is it creates a visual template for you. Now you can walk into this directory and open up an IDE of your choice. In this case, I'm using Visual Studio Code. So you'll see that you have a few folders here. You have visual.ts, which is sort of describes the custom visual. You have a constructor, you have update, you have destroy. You have a folder with styles. So this is typically where you would keep your style sheets. We use less so that you can organize your styles in a more organized fashion. We also have a file called the capabilities.json, and this describes data roles and data view mappings. This tells us how the UI in Power BI would map onto the data view that is supplied to you. There is pbi-viz.json, which is just contains information about the API version, where the icon is, what are some of the external JavaScript libraries you have, where are your capabilities, etc. There's also the TypeScript config, which tells us what files you're going to be including as part of your visuals build. All right, so let's start. If I type pbi-viz start, what that does is it starts up a local server, which starts serving up my visualizations. Now, in Power BI, I can go under the Settings tab, go to Settings, Developer, and I can hit this button, Enable Developer Visual for Testing. Now, when I go back and I edit my report, I will notice a special visual called the Developer Visual has appeared. I can click on it, and instantly, what it's doing is sending back the visualization that came out of the box. This is just a simple visualization which shows numbers incrementing each time an update call is called. All right, some of the newer features of these tools are that it offers you incremental build and update. So if I get in here and I start changing the style, say I change this to red, and when I save it, I can instantly see that my visual updates. At the same time, I can do the same thing here where I go into my TypeScript file and I change some options. And I can see that it instantly updates right here. Capabilities describes what appears in this pane. So you can see this category data is matching this display name. It's trying to tell you that there are two data roles that would produce this data view mapping. And you can change these as well. For example, if I were to just change to label header, and I can see instant feedback right here. So that talked about the sort of incremental nature of how you can make changes in your IDE, and you can instantly see the reflections in Power BI. So let's try to build a bar chart. I'm going to build a bar chart using D3. And the first thing I need before I can start building is I would require the typings for the bar chart. So I go write typings, search D3, and it would list out a number of packages that I can get. And in here, I want the typings, DT, D3 package, and I want to install it in my global namespace. That's it. And that would download the typings for D3 and install it under my typings folder. As you can see, I have a new folder called typings, and under globals, I have D3. Now, I just have to go back in my TS config to be sure that I'm now saying that I want to use these typings. 3. And that's it. And now I can start updating my visual code and start using D3. So if you go here and you start typing D3, you should see IntelliSense pop up for it. All right, so let me just empty out this visual and start creating our bar chart. All right, let me restart server. Oops, I made a mistake. Can go back in here and can adjust this to the actual typings file. Now if I go back in here and I can start, and incremental build has started. I have prepared some code snips that I'm going to paste in and to show you how each visualization is built. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to copy in some interfaces that I need for my visualization. So here I'm building a bar chart. A bar chart has a bunch of data points, and that is essentially my view model. I have some additional information called the data max, and this will help me sort of figure out what is my maximum range so I can derive my scales. And in each bar chart data point, I have two things. I have the category and I have the value. I'm now going to copy in some test data. It is very common for you to provide some test data for your visualization. So instead of starting off with trying to bind data directly with Power BI, it is always good to sort of solidify your view model as you need with some test data. This helps you initially develop your visual without even involving Power BI's data or data view mappings. And as mentioned earlier, constructor is a place where you would put some of your setup code. So here I have a SVG element that I'm attaching to the HTML element that came through the options. And I'm doing this because I'm going to be using D3 to create an SVG visualization. You would construct your DOM just in the way you would want to build your visualization. I'm also going to attach some group elements, one from my bar chart container and the other from my axes. And this is where each of my individual components of the visualizations will live. Since I only ever need the bar chart container once and the axes container once, and they live throughout the lifecycle of my visualization, I do this in the constructor. Also, you've noticed I save off the host object because it is useful for creating things like selection manager and selection IDs covered in the future. And now what I'm cutting and pasting in is pretty standard D3 code. So a lot of the examples online you would see about bar charts and D3 would have this code. And what it is doing, I'll walk through really quickly, is it's creating some scales dependent on my test data that I have provided. It is also creating an axis, and then it's using D3 to doing data binding to the data I have with the DOM elements that are on the screen. And when I save this and I restart my visual here, you can see that there is a bar chart of sorts on the screen. One of the things I notice here is there's this fat line for the domain, and I want to get rid of it. So you can go into the less file, and you can declare your path's display property to just be none. All right. And once you do that and you come back, you can see that line is gone and you just have the labels below this. And this looks good for the start. You had some test data and you were binding to it. Now, the next thing we're going to do is switch back to the PowerPoint presentation and talk a little bit more about data binding before I show you how to actually do it. Coming back to data binding. In data binding, there are a few things at play. One of the things is in the capabilities, you would declare something called data roles. And data roles directly ties into what the user sees on the UI, and they would drag in things about the data role. So in here, I have a data role called category, and its kind is grouping. And what that means is it's a set of discrete values which are your categories. And the second parameter here is a type measure, and that is just a sort of a aggregate that you can perform on top of the category values. If you come down here, you'll notice that in the data view mapping, I'm saying I want a categorical mapping where the categories come from the first row, which is category, and you just list them out. And the values come from the second row, which is the measure values. And when you receive your data view, the category and the values come as part of your data view. All right, let's see how we can do this in live code. So I'm going to take a data view transform function, and I'm going to just paste it right in here. And what this data view transform function is doing is essentially is taking the data view that you receive from Power BI and converting it into the bar chart view model that I have here. And what we typically recommend that you do is you put all your transformation into one function. This sort of abstracts away your visual from what is data view. And this is also typically useful because in the future, we might want to perform this transformation even before the data gets to your visualization. And that way, your visualization only has to deal with your view model. All right. So in this transform function, what I have here is the default view model, which is just a set of blank values in case none of these conditions are met. So that means the data view doesn't contain the data in the shape that you can draw. So assuming that the data is in the shape that you can draw, now I can start pulling out values that I need from it. In category, I have pulled out all the categories from here, and then I have gone into the values array to pull out the values for each category for the first series. Now I'm looping through all the categories, and I'm creating a data point for each, and I'm appending the category's name along with the value as my data point. For the data max, I'm just pulling out the max value local that was supplied by the data view. And then I end up returning this to the visual. One thing to note, interestingly, is if I were to save this and say something were to fail, you would see that TypeScript would prompt you here and tell you that something is not building. At the same time, even in the visual, you'll note that there's a compile error. This sort of gives you a make sure that errors don't go unnoticed and that while you're building a visual, if your script isn't compiling, the tools let you know. All right. So here, I would now replace my test data with my visual transform and pass in my update options and the host. And with that, we are ready to start binding real data in. And what I can do here is I can start pulling in some values. So I will pull product in, and I'll pull the number of tweets about it. And you can see now it is driven off real data. And for the data binding aspect of it, let me jump into capabilities. The capabilities here, I did not make any modifications because I was using the same capabilities that came with the original data view, which sort of fit nicely with this, where you had one category and it was of kind grouping, and then you had values, which was of kind measure. And what I was saying was the same as in the PowerPoint presentation, is that there's categories and then there is values. So categories would be populated from the category bucket, and the measure values just bind straight to the measure bucket, which correspond to this category. All right. So the next thing I have is, how would you sort of make use of colors in Power BI? So the host comes with a set of colors that are used in all the visuals of Power BI. So if you go into the constructor and you look under the options and you go to host, and you'll notice colors, which is just an array of colors. The problem with using colors out of the box is that there is no way to control which color was bound to which object. And in the example that we've given online, we have sort of created a color palette control that you can use to sort of bind color values to data view objects. And let's go in and add that library into our visual. So I can go in here into my TypeScript config, and I can just say source color.ts. And if you look into the file, it doesn't have much. What it has is it creates a singleton color palette, which allows you to manage colors. So every time you get a color for a key, it either assigns a new color from the array of colors that you got, or if it already has an assigned color, then it returns that color to you. So this is sort of helps you manage your colors and bind them to keys versus you having to do them manually. Let's go back in the visual and start using this color palette. Let me get some more code out. All right. So what I need here is I'm going to modify my view model. I'm going to say that I need a color now for each category, and it would be of type string. I'm going to go in here, and I'm going to create a color palette. So I'm going to say colors equal to create color palette. And I'm going to get the host colors and call reset on the color palette. And in here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that now each color using this color palette, let me get a color. And in the key here, what I'm using is just the category tag. So using the same so what I have done here is I have instantiated the color palette, and I'm assigning colors of each point, and the key is the label of the column. And since I've added a new file for my configuration to pick it up, I would need to restart my command line tool. And now when I save it, and I move back in here, and I start all over again, you see that there are no colors. And the reason is, although it's assigning it to the view model, I'm not yet using it in for my visual. So I go back in here, and I say fill, and I say D, and then I start using the color value as its fill value. And when I save it, you can see that Power BI is now making use of all your colors for your custom visualization. All right. So the other most important thing is not just about visualizing data, but it's about performing selection. So if I want to select this, I want to be able to highlight another visual across it. I'm going to copy this in, and I'm going to switch this to a donut chart, for example. And I want that an interaction on my visual causes a cross highlight on the HoloLens side. And that is pretty straightforward to do. So again, we start off with modifying a view model to sort of store selection IDs. So I can go here, I can say selection ID is of type iSelectionID. And iSelectionID is an interface declared by Power BI. And what it does is it uniquely identifies a point so that it can do cross-filtering across. And it does this by using the identity object that comes down with the data view. Now let's go back in here, go to the selection ID, and I can say host.create selection ID builder. And this is a helper builder to create a unique ID. And what I can do here is I can say with category, right? And in this, it requires two things. It requires the category column, which I have saved under category. And it requires the index, which is just the index of the category. And finally, you call create selection ID, which returns the constructed selection ID. And what that will do is that will create a selection ID and now save it onto each of these points. The other thing is to make use of these selections. And that can be done by using D3 to add an event handler onto each of these IDs. So the first thing you would want to do is to create a selection manager. A selection manager is something that comes as part of the host, right? So selection, and like the color palette, what it allows you to do is to manage the state of your selections so that you can use them for example, it manages, hey, I clicked this point, and now if I click it again, it would unselect that point. And you could do the state management manually, but it is better to use a selection manager to perform these operations. I can do this dot selection manager equals to host. Create a selection manager. And I'm doing this in the constructor because I only plan to ever use the selection manager once. I only want to construct the selection manager once. Selection manager. All right. And what it does is, now I'm getting the selection manager, and in this function, I'm using D3 to bind each bar to a click handler. And when a user clicks an item, what it does is it would use the selection manager and use the selection ID that we generated earlier to perform a selection. That returns a promise, which would also give you the list of selection IDs that are currently selected. If the list of IDs is greater than 0, that means an item is selected and everything should go to an opacity of 0.5. And the object that is actually selected, we should set the opacity to 1. So this is what the effect looks like. And you can see the rest of them are slightly faded out while this is in context. If I click it again, it deselects and everything else is back to normal. And I can perform selections across. And just like that, you were able to add interaction that did a cross-filter on another visual. All right. So that was selection. One of the key things you would notice, so for example, let me draw your attention to this pie chart. If I click on the formatting tab, I'm able to do a bunch of things. I'm able to turn a legend on and off. I'm able to manipulate data colors of visualizations. And these are done via formatting options. When I go here in our visuals, you see that this formatting pane is empty. So how can we fill it up? And the easiest way, if you just want to get some default options out, is to go back into capabilities, go as a sibling of data view mappings, add something called objects. And what that would do is it would give you some default objects right out of the box. So you can toggle the title of the visualization on and off. If you wanted to set some background color other than white, you can toggle that as well, and you can switch it on and off. But these are properties that are available for every visual. What you really want is something custom to your visual. For example, you want to be able to turn these axis labels on and off. Like you want to be able to either just show it without axes or not. And so let's try to add those in. Once again, I'm going to go bring in this utility, which I use to sort of extract the properties from my data view. Again, you could get these properties out manually, but it is a lot easier to do it with this utility as it does a bunch of null checks before it returns you the property value. And let's go back in index. know, tsconfig, and let's add this library here. All right. Once again, because we have added a new file, we should restart our compilation. All right. So the first thing I would like is to add an object for my axes, which is called enable axes, right? So I can go in here and I can just plug that right there. And so you have a bucket called enable axes, and then you have a display name for it, and then you have some properties that call it, for example, show. So maybe I just want to call this axes instead of enable axes. And so this is how it works. So this is what you see here. The title is the object, and then what's under it are the individual properties. This little button here on the title is actually exposing a very special property called show. So if you have a property called show, instead of showing it in this list, it actually just attaches itself to the parent header. And so that is what we're going to do here. We're going to have a option for the axis, and we're going to have one property called show. And the type of this property is Boolean. What the type does for you is it shows you the type of control. So Power BI will interpret that you want a Boolean type, so it gives you a switch for on and off. If you said numeric or text, it gives you a text box. If you had a fill type property, it would give you a color picker. All right, now save that, go back into the visual, and I'm going to add a new interface for bar chart settings. And you can do this in many different ways, but I like everything to be saved inside my view model. And let's call this bar chart settings. And we can come up with some defaults. So we can say settings. Enable axes show. And we can call this to be false, right? And that can be our default. And for here, what we can do is we can pull it out from the view model. So I can go in here and I can say settings, enable axes, show, and the show corresponds to so the default is false, and the objects come from data view. So I can do data views, metadata.objects. And what I'm doing here is I'm giving the helper library my set of objects, and I'm telling it to get me this object and this particular property of that object. And the default is false. So if this doesn't exist, it would be false. And when I save this back in, if I go back into my visual, I can now see, I cannot see the property here. And why is that? And the reason it's there is because short of just declaring it in your capabilities, you also need a companion function called enumerate data view objects. And let me just copy this implementation in, and we can explain that. And what enumerate data view objects is doing is it gives you an object name that it's going to enumerate. So the property pane would call into your visual. It will say, hey, I'm going to display this object. Can you give me all the properties and the values that I would like to show? And if you do not return a property's value, what it just means is that it's going to use its default, which is undefined, and it will not show that property. So the reason we have this function is to give you a chance to be able to not display properties. It can be that a state in your visual doesn't result in a property being shown, or an option is not there, and this is how you would choose to hide it. So I'm just going to do, because I need some of the settings to be able to return the value, I'm going to now save the view model in here. And call this the bar chart view model. And whenever I generate it, I'm also going to save it in my view model class. I can come back here and I can say this.viewModel.settings. And then I can get the axis settings out. Now when I come back to my property pane, you can see that my axis option is available. And I can turn it on and off. Nothing is happening because I'm not yet using it for anything. But you can see it's successfully able to toggle state. Now I just need to come in here, and I'm going to do something pretty simple, which is just going to use the view model, settings, enable axes show. If it show, then adjust the margin. If not, then don't. And that would simulate hiding of the axes. So now if I come here, you can see that the axes is hidden and shown. And this works across everything. All right. So short of changing the axes, so this is static properties. What if you wanted to individually be able for the user to control the color of this object? All right, so let's add another property. So let's add the color selector. And what color selector is going to allow you to do is being able to select the data colors of any bar chart. So here I have the display name called data colors. I have some properties called fill, and it has a display name which says color, and its type is a fill. There are a few types of fill, so we have, in this case, we are using a solid color. So you'd say you have a type fill, which is solid, and it's, so the type is true. And you come back in to your visual.ts file. Same thing in your enumerate. Now you're going to want to return a case for this color selector as well so that it can show up. And once again, I'm going to go into my view model. I'm going to get my data points. And what it's doing here is it's going through each selector, each data point, sorry, and it's creating an enumeration for it. If you notice here, I have the selector as null because it's not referring to anything specific. It's just a static property of the bar chart. Here, I actually provide the selector with the generated out of the ID. And what that does is because I'm trying to say that this selector or this enumeration is tied to a specific data point. So if I were to render a completely different data set in this visual, like if I were to change the bindings, then the selectors would change. And that means the colors are not just by the index numbers, but they actually correspond to this specific data point. So I've done that. And then when I go back, just one last thing that I want to do is to be able to sort of get the colors out. So I've declared the capabilities, I've declared the enumeration. Now in my transform, I need to be sure that I'm using, and I'm using these things again. So instead of color palette, I have colors. Let me format the code a little. So I have the default color, which I get from the category. And then if, and that'll be my default color. And if I go in here, let me just expand this out a little. And I would get the categorical object value, which is of type fill. I would give it the category, the index, the color selector, and say I want to extract the fill property. This is my default. And then that would be the color that I finally extract out. So I save that in. What did I do? So now that I have everything in place, I can save it and it will compile. And let's go back into my report. And what I can see is in data colors, I actually have colors for each of these items. Say I wanted to change HoloLens to be purple, I can easily change that now. And you can see that this is bound to just HoloLens and not to an index. So if I were to come back here and I would change from products to just company, right? You can see that the color values are different. It's not just for the first index. But if I was to come back here and I get my purple back for HoloLens. Finally, after you're done with creating your visual, you might want to package it. So how you can achieve that is by going to the command line, typing pbi-viz package. What it'll do, it'll build your visual, it'll create a pbi-viz package and put it in the distribution directory. And then you can go into your report and say import visual. You can select the package in your distribution folder, open it up, it adds it here. And now you can start binding fields. Product, tweets, you can maybe even toggle out some formatting options, show your axes, and you're good to go. And you can just save this in your report and everything would just work as advertised. I think hopefully this will help you get started in building your own wonderful custom visualizations. As always, if you have issues that you need to file about the documentation, or if you would like to contribute to make our tools better, please visit our GitHub page, file issues, make a pull request, and we can guide you through the rest. Thanks for watching.